KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. The Hanford Reservation is one of the most polluted places in the world. For over 40 years, the United States produced plutonium there for nuclear weapons and released hundreds of billions of gallons of liquid and chemical radioactive waste into the soil and groundwater. Now, a new small modular nuclear reactor is being proposed at Hanford, already home to the largest nuclear cleanup in the United States. Today we talk with Lauren Goldberg, Legal and Program Director with Columbia Riverkeeper, about a new report that Columbia Riverkeeper has released, exposing the critical dangers of operating this new small modular nuclear reactor. Lauren, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
Well, the great question for today's interview is, why are we not talking about Hanford's cleanup today? Why are we talking about building more nukes at Hanford?
Therein lies the problem, Barbara. So Columbia Riverkeeper just launched a campaign and released a report opposing the development of more nuclear energy, new so-called small modular nuclear reactors within a carve-out of the Hanford site. And it is a huge distraction from what we should be focused on, which is cleanup of the most toxic site in the Western Hemisphere, the most toxic place in the United States, which is the Hanford nuclear site, located near the Tri-Cities in Washington State. And we should also be here talking about how do we solve the climate crisis? What should we be focused on? At the end of the day, it is not the development of more nuclear energy and absolutely not the development of more nuclear energy at a site that has been for generations sacrificed and where we must be focused on cleanup.
Well, let's talk a bit about this new technology, the small modular nukes. They are being promoted by everyone from Bill Gates to François Macron as one of the best salvos in the fight against climate change, that this is a carbon neutral, clean energy that's going to be a very important part of the portfolio of new renewable energy. What is the fallacy with that thought?
Well, first, let's start with the concept that small modular nuclear reactors are new. These are not a new idea. Small reactors date back to the first flush of nuclear reactor design and construction. So actually in the 1950s, the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission funded the construction of several small power reactors. And here's what is so interesting and why we must study history and learn from the past. All of those reactors ended up shutting down early because they were not economically competitive. And now we have this, you know, incredible PR run from the nuclear industry. We've got this new shiny idea. Let's cite so-called high-temperature, gas-cooled nuclear reactors. We're going to call them small because they don't generate quite as much power. They're modular, a word that sounds flashy. Well, that means because they can't be assembled on site. They're assembled in factories and shipped. The idea is not new. Some of the technologies are new. But what is clear is that they have historically not been economically competitive. And in the current renewable landscape here in the Pacific Northwest, there is no indication that they can outrun wind and solar and other renewable energy, as well as energy efficiency.
Well, you mentioned that the technology of small nuclear reactors is not new and goes back to the 50s. In fact, I grew up less than a mile from one of those small nuclear reactors. It was an experimental reactor, a laboratory reactor at Worcester Polytechnic Institute. And being a science whiz kid in those days, my father would take me to visit that reactor, and I thought it was really cool. And I had no thought at all about what it meant to be living within a mile or something like this. And then you go forward to when I was in college, and I lived again across the street from another one of these laboratory reactors at Columbia University. And this time I was involved in protests to shut that reactor down. So I think in those 10 years, there's a change in consciousness. It seems like this push to promote small modular nukes is actually going back to the 50s in some ways.
We completely agree. And we think the focus right now should be on how do we solve the climate crisis, how do we get fossil fuels out of the system, and how do we clean up the Hanford nuclear site, which, you know, this particular proposal, which is the X Energy proposal, is proposed within a carve-out of the Hanford nuclear site. It is a fallacy that is being pushed by the nuclear industry that SMRs, as they're called, you know, are lower risk. But the reality is that they produce an incredible volume of spent fuel, and there is no long-term plan for the disposal of that fuel. So the types of risks that are at play with SMRs are many of the same risks that for decades have stopped and prevented the development of nuclear reactors in the state of Oregon. You know, for folks that moved to Oregon relatively recently, they might not know, but you're not allowed to build a nuclear reactor in the state of Oregon. You know, following the 1979 accident at the Three Mile Island Nuclear Power Plant, Oregon voters actually passed an initiative that prohibits the licensing of new nuclear power plants unless approved by the voters, and also only if there's a permanent national repository, so a permanent dumping ground for the disposal of high-level waste. And to this day in the U.S., there is no such place. And that those same motivations that pushed Oregon voters to take this incredibly strong stance against nuclear power, voters in Washington state, people throughout the region need to again engage in a robust debate about what is the place of nuclear energy and nuclear spent fuel in the Pacific Northwest. And the reason Columbia Riverkeeper put out an in-depth report on this proposed small modular nuclear reactor at Hanford is we need to launch that debate now, because this particular proposal is on a fast track. In fact, the backers, it's called X Energy of this proposal, they secured $80 million from the federal government already. But they need to site this in the next 7 to 8 years. So it's a really tight siting timeline compared to other nuclear proposals. And that is why, you know, people in Portland, Southwest Washington, throughout the Northwest need to be engaged in a debate, in a discussion on the future of nuclear energy.
Well, let's talk about the exact location. First of all, let's talk about where the Hanford Nuclear Reservation is located, and where is this siting in relationship to the larger part of Hanford?
The Hanford Nuclear Site is located along the Columbia River in Washington State. This site was established, it was a top secret project of the United States government during World War II to support the development of nuclear weapons. The site is enormous. It's roughly the size of LA. And the cleanup mission at Hanford since the late 1980s, has been cleanup. That has been the focus, not the development of more nuclear weapons or nuclear energy. Now, there is a carve out of the Hanford site, which is along the Columbia River. It's known as the Energy Northwest Campus. And this is where we have the only nuclear power plant in the Pacific Northwest, which is the Columbia Generating Station. There are additional sites at the Energy Northwest Campus that have not been developed. And that is where X Energy wants to site this small modular nuclear reactor. So it is adjacent to the Hanford site. It is surrounded on all sides by Hanford and on the other side by the Columbia River. And it's roughly 10 miles from Richland, Washington, so near the Tri-Cities.
Now, originally, there were supposed to be 3 commercial nuclear reactors at that site. In those days, it was called WHOOPS, which was a very telling name for a huge chaotic failure. I'm not exactly sure exactly how much of that got built.
Right. So there, the Columbia Generating Station is the legacy of WHOOPS, which stands for the Washington Public Power Supply System. It was started in the 1950s as a means to guarantee electric power to homes and industry in the Northwest. And it ultimately ended up producing the largest municipal bond default in U.S. history. So there's this acronym now, WHOOPS, something we should all learn from as we consider adding more nuclear infrastructure at this site. And what's so interesting here is that you have the Columbia Generating Station. There were other nuclear infrastructure developed at the Energy Northwest campus, and it is actually some of that infrastructure that X Energy wants to use, some of that existing infrastructure, for the development of this new SMR proposal.
Let's get a bit more into the details of what this reactor would be. Why, I guess one question I have is, why is it being promoted as a green alternative to fossil fuels?
Well, the nuclear industry promotes itself as a green alternative to fossil fuels because of carbon greenhouse gas emissions. But when you take a step back and you look at the overall impact of nuclear infrastructure, nuclear energy here in the Northwest, you need to consider where it's being sited and what how operations will occur, what kind of safety risks exist, and also what's the long-term plan for radioactive waste. And it's once you dig a little deeper than, oh, there aren't carbon emissions, that the shiny green patina fades. And so when Columbia Riverkeeper took a step back and developed a report to analyze and look at, what is there to gain, what's there to lose, one of the very, where we started was looking at the history of the Hanford Nuclear Site, which encompasses a large area within culturally significant lands of multiple tribal nations, including the Yakima Nez, the Umatilla, the Nez Perce, and the Wanapum people. And you have an area where, Native people have used this area since time immemorial to hunt, to fish, to gather food, to trade. Tribal nations have been at the forefront for many years in advocating for Hanford cleanup. Now, earlier this year in August, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation sent a letter to the U.S. Department of Energy, which again has already invested $80 million in this small modular nuclear reactor proposal. And in that letter, the tribe detailed its strong opposition to SMR development in Hanford. And, you know, among their points was that, you know, this expansion will distract from cleanup. There is no long-term plan for the waste. And it's many of the reasons that the Umatilla tribe cited that Columbia Riverkeeper is also looking to in terms of our analysis of, you know, is this the way to tackle the climate crisis, which has been a huge focus of Columbia Riverkeeper's work for the last two decades in terms of trying to stop coal export, oil by rail terminals, liquefied natural gas. You know, the climate crisis is here and now, but, you know, it's our belief that you need to do the problem solving, looking at all of the potential impacts. And when you look at all the impacts of more nuclear energy development at Hanford, it just doesn't stack up.
Well, it's a kind of weird cycle that I see, or maybe coming full circle, that initially, and I know Columbia Riverkeeper has been dealing with Hanford for a long time, that was one of the biggest concerns environmentally on the Columbia River, was all the noxious radioactive and chemical waste that was stored there that was leaking into the rest of the environment. And then we started dealing with coal trains and oil trains and gas pipelines and LNG, and we sort of didn't think as much about radioactivity. The Northwest has been very successful in stopping almost every one of those projects, the fossil fuel projects that's been planned in the last 15 years or more. Now we're back to nukes again. How do you explain that?
It's a great question. You know, there's been incredible legislation passed in both Oregon and Washington with ambitious goals to tackle the climate crisis and bring more clean energy online. And it is the outcome of that legislation, as well as, you know, efforts by the federal government to tackle the climate crisis that lead us today to seeing what, you know, I think to many is kind of a duh. Of course, we wouldn't add more nuclear, you know, energy development along the Columbia River at the most contaminated site in the Western Hemisphere. But it's leading us to a point where many smart people are engaged in very serious efforts to cite these SMRs. And so, you know, that's why we're here today talking to you about why the Hanford Reach of the Columbia River is such an incredibly special place. We're talking about the last 55 miles of free-flowing Columbia River. We actually have main stem salmon spawning happen. You know, this is an area that is, you know, words, you know, really can't even describe the significance to multiple tribal nations of this particular place. And it is an area where our laser focus as people that live and work in the Pacific Northwest must be cleaning up Hanford. And the fact that we have to debate, you know, more nuclear energy development anywhere in the Northwest, let alone at Hanford, is absurd.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Lauren Goldberg, who's with Columbia Riverkeeper, and we're talking about the struggle that Columbia Riverkeeper is leading along with the tribes to stop a new nuclear program from getting set up at the Hanford Reservation. Let's talk a little bit more about why these nukes are being promoted as something that's environmentally benign and what is really their seamy underside.
Right. So the nuclear industry has been in a downward spiral, and so they needed to identify a path forward. And therein, they've branded these small reactors. And, you know, they rely on less nuclear fuel. They also produce a smaller amount of energy. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you look at experts on the nuclear industry, for example, you know, leading scientists at the Union of Concerned Scientists, they're out there sounding the alarm on the risks of these types of reactors. So X Energy, which is proposing the small modular nuclear reactor at Hanford, it's proposing a novel design. It's a high temperature gas reactor. What we know is that they are susceptible to minor failures that may trigger a serious accident. So typical problems that can occur with this technology are things like graphite dust accumulation, water oil intrusion, fuel failures. And then when you couple these failures with human error, they can lead to large-scale disasters. So in addition to technology-specific accidents, you also need to look at the site. Where are these reactors proposed? Well, they're proposed within a carve-out of the Hanford nuclear site near the Columbia River. It's an area that's been studied extensively for earthquake risk. And we know that there is a serious risk of a large earthquake in this vicinity. It's also an area that in the future is at risk of flooding. So at the end of the day, when you couple the technology with the siting, this is the wrong place to be siting this type of high-risk technology.
Well, there's been a history of other interests before the current company coming in to site a small modular nuke at this site. So let's talk a little bit about who preceded the current proposal.
So there was another proposal by a company backed by Bill Gates. That proposal has moved on to a different part of the West, and Bill Gates has withdrawn his support for this proposal in Washington State. NuScale, which is a Portland-based company, has been pushing a number of SMR proposals within the West. And what's interesting is when you look at places where the NuScale's been advocating for SMRs in Utah, communities which initially rolled out the welcome mat are now backing away. And a lot of it has to do with the economics. When you compare nuclear energy, whether it is, you know, a conventional nuclear reactor or small modular nuclear reactor, to highly competitive renewables, you know, wind, solar, geothermal, it simply doesn't stack up. And so now we have this proposal from X Energy. They're looking at siting it on, you know, a fast track. They have not filed any applications yet with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is the federal government agency they'll need permits from. They haven't been moving this forward yet at the state level. But what we're expecting is that next year, this is going to be front and center for people in Washington and Oregon to weigh in on, you know, is the way we want to tackle the climate crisis adding even more of a nuclear legacy to the Columbia River and the Hanford site?
Well, it's interesting that Bill Gates was behind the initial proposal for a small nuke in this location, because he's been a big promoter of small modular nukes as the answer to the climate crisis. What are your thoughts on what his interest in that project was and why he's been promoting nuclear energy so strongly?
I think, like many of us, we want to solve the climate crisis, and we know we need to solve it now and fast. At the end of the day, we look to other experts on, you know, the nuclear industry. And I think it's very telling that earlier this year, Allison McFarlane, who's the former chair of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, she wrote an article titled, "Nuclear Energy Will Not Be the Solution to Climate Change. There is not enough time for nuclear innovation to save the planet." And that's what it comes down to. McFarlane's argument supports the idea that renewable energy resources such as wind and solar will outstrip nuclear energy. And at the end of the day, McFarlane identifies SMRs as a false climate solution. And so I think, you know, that looking at SMRs right now is a huge distraction from the conversations we need to be having and that are ongoing in the Pacific Northwest about how we tackle the climate crisis, how we stop our reliance on frack gas and other, you know, greenwashing that's gone along with some other technologies. And, you know, at the end of the day, the conversation needs to be around technologies that are not nuclear. We've learned from the past that these are not economically viable and come with risks that are simply unacceptable.
Well, back in 2004, I was at an environmental journalist fellowship program at the University of Colorado, and we had one discussion with several different scientists on different sides of the issue of how was the best way to really address climate change. And there was one guy who was heavily promoting frack gas as a bridge fuel. And this, of course, was 17 years ago, so maybe it made a little more sense then, but not really. And then also nuclear power. And then there was this other scientist there who was rolling his eyes through the whole thing, and I was identifying with him a lot because he was just so angry at this guy for thinking these really backward thoughts. And then we jump forward 17 years, and we're still having the same conversation. Why is that? I mean, why haven't we learned in 17 years that we really need to move forward with the technologies that really seem to be proving themselves?
The fossil fuel industry, the nuclear industry, are very powerful lobbies in the United States. When you look at the amount of funding that is going into SMR, small modular nuclear reactors, when you look at their history of failure, it really, I think at the end of the day, is a reflection on powerful lobbying interests. So if we start first with the nuclear industry, you know, in 2020, the U.S. Department of Energy awarded X-Energy, which is the backer of this SMR proposal at Hanford, $80 million in initial funding to build the reactor through its Advanced Reactor Demonstration Program, which is dispersing $230 million. You look at the fossil fuel industry and the extent to which it's captured so many elected officials, both whether you're talking federal, state, or local levels. And I think really at the end of the day, it calls for the types of grassroots activism that has been at the core of the Pacific Northwest's success in holding the line on fossil fuels and ensuring that we are doing all we can as a region to take on the climate crisis. You know, part of why I'm here today talking to you is because we need people throughout Oregon and Washington to start engaging in really important activism to stop more nuclear energy along the Columbia River. We need to stand in solidarity with tribal nations and indigenous people who are saying enough is enough. This is not clean energy when you're talking about leaving generations of radioactive and radioactive and toxic waste along the Columbia River. So it's really a time where we can learn from the wildly successful effort in the Pacific Northwest to stop fossil fuel development and take that energy, that activism. Let's keep fighting fossil fuels, but let's also make sure that we're not distracted and that we hold the line on nuclear energy.
Well, I also am frustrated by a kind of willful ignorance on the part of people who I would think would know better, who are not aware, I think, on some level of the innate dangers of nuclear power and are following for people like Bill Gates who say that this is the panacea. Another conversation that I had a few years ago, and this is probably about 14 years ago, is at a environmental journalist conference down at Stanford, and was having lunch with this woman who was the head of the environmental journalism department at Stanford. And there had just been a panel about nuclear energy as an important source of renewable energy and in dealing with the climate crisis. And I told her why I thought that was like a really dangerous thought. And she was citing all these people, like Jim Hansen, for one, who supports nuclear power. And I told her, well, living downstream from the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, I'm very aware of the dangers of the waste that's produced by nukes, and that is not being dealt with. She said, what's Hanford? Is that the same as Three Mile Island? And she's the head of the Environmental Journalism Department. So that was pretty frightening to me. But it seems like there is this real huge gap of understanding about the real dangers of nukes. I'm the part of people who are in educational situations, in people who are journalists, and even some scientists.
No, absolutely. I mean, the Hanford nuclear site is, first of all, you know, as someone who spent time on the Columbia River there, it's beautiful. I mean, this is a place that is absolutely worth fighting for. It is, you know, the White Bluffs, free-flowing Columbia River, and then in the background, there's mothballed nuclear reactors. And if you close your eyes, you can imagine the hundreds of thousands of gallons of radioactive and toxic waste from massive underground tanks that have leaked into groundwater. It is, you know, the ultimate in contradictions. We need people in the Northwest to value the Hanford Reach, the Hanford site, and the need to invest our time and energy in cleanup. And part of putting that into practice is ensuring we don't have more nuclear waste left at this site. So what it comes down to with small modular nuclear reactors like the one that's proposed at Hanford, they are just like nuclear reactors that are currently in operation, and that they produce nuclear waste. We're talking about waste that stays radioactive for thousands of years. In the United States, there is no National Geologic Repository. That is a place to put this radioactive waste so that it doesn't threaten people, wildlife, fish, etc. So what that means is that this toxic and radioactive waste, if this SMR moves forward, if this proposal moves forward, it will be stored on site in dry casks that are licensed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. That waste will stay radioactive for hundreds of thousands of years, and it will stay there at Hanford until a National Geologic Repository is identified. And then that waste will need to get shipped through countless communities to reach that repository if it ever happens. And so again, we need to learn from the past. What happened in Oregon with the Trojan nuclear power plant, you know, there was that promise of, oh, one day we'll have that national waste repository. We're still waiting for one day. And so right now our focus must be on let's get Hanford cleaned up. Let's invest, you know, federal money in Hanford cleanup, not more nuclear energy development at Hanford. And for people across the Pacific Northwest, let's come together and call on our elected officials to oppose more nuclear energy development at Hanford. And for those of you who are listening that want to do something right now, you know, jump on Columbia River Keeper's website, take action. You know, we have a petition to multiple elected officials, members of Congress, asking them to look not just for current generations, but for future, that there's no role for nuclear energy, nuclear waste along the Columbia River.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and KODX, LPFM, KMUN, and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Lauren Goldberg with Columbia Riverkeeper about plans to build a small modular nuclear reactor along the Hanford Reservation. Well, talking about the Trojan nuclear reactor, a number of years ago, they took down the cooling tower for that decommissioned nuclear reactor. It was a big event. I actually had friends who watched it from across the Columbia River in Kalama. At that moment, it seemed like Trojan had gone away. But in reality, the worst part of the reactor, the fuel rods, the whole core of the reactor was still there for in perpetuity, it seems. And the other kind of interesting thing about that is I got to see the back end of the Trojan nuclear reactor a couple years ago when I was floating in the river looking at the Kalama Methanol Refinery site, which is exactly across the river from where Trojan is. We were talking before about how a lot of people who have moved to Oregon since the early 90s when the Trojan plant was shut down don't even know that there was a nuclear reactor in Oregon. And Oregon feels like a nuclear-free place. Why should people in Oregon be concerned about what's going on upriver in Hanford where there's so much nuclear activity going on?
Yeah, there's so much to learn from the Trojan nuclear experience in Oregon. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, the Trojan nuclear site is in just north of St. Helens, Oregon. So across the river from, you know, Kalama, Washington. And well, you know, as you mentioned, Barbara, there's been, you know, deconstruction. To this day, there are 34 dry casks of spent nuclear fuel stored on a concrete pad at the former Trojan nuclear plant site. And for years, the U.S. Department of Energy, which again is the same federal agency that is providing $80 million for a new proposed nuclear reactor at Hanford, that very same agency promised the developers of Trojan, Portland General Electric, PGE, oh, we'll take that nuclear waste, that spent nuclear waste, we'll take it to a national repository. To this day, that hasn't happened. And you know, there were a number of lawsuits against the U.S. Department of Energy. It defaulted on many agreements with nuclear utilities across the country because the federal government had said, oh, we'll take all that spent fuel for disposal. And to this day, it hasn't happened. So there's so much for folks to learn from the Trojan example. Let's learn from the mistakes of the past. Let's not add more nuclear waste along the Columbia River. And to the specific question that you asked about, you know, why should folks all the way downstream in living around Portland or Astoria and Vancouver, why should they care? Well, nuclear energy is developed in the name of clean energy for our region. And so if you care about how, when you turn on the lights, who it's impacting, how it's impacting the environment, there are real reasons to oppose nuclear energy development at Hanford in Washington State. The risks from more nuclear energy along the Columbia River are risks that we all bear. And that is why it is so critical that even before this company, you know, starts asking for approvals, authorizations from federal and state agencies, that we need to lift up voices from across the Pacific Northwest. People advocating in solidarity with tribal governments like Confederated Tribes of Umatilla, people advocating and speaking from their hearts about we must tackle the climate crisis, but not at the cost that nuclear energy delivers.
Well, it seems like it's been an insolvable problem to find a national repository for high-level waste. And Hanford was one of the earliest places being considered. And when I did my first project about Hanford back in 1982, it was at the top of the list for a place to be cited for the repository. I even took a tour of this inside of this mountain that they were planning on putting the spent fuel rods. And there was a huge protest about it, and that was torpedoed pretty quickly. Then Yucca Mountain in Nevada, and also some salt caves in New Mexico were also being considered, and those have been shot down. So I don't even know if there is a place now where they're even considering building this repository. So it seems to me that we may just have these dry casts of spent fuel rods sitting on pads of cement forever, which is pretty frightening.
It is frightening, and it's why when we're talking about the benefits and risks of nuclear energy development, we need to look at it with our eyes wide open. We need to look at it from, you know, decades of failed promises from the U.S. government, which has been, you know, failing for many years at Hanford cleanup as well, which is another story. We need to look at it with eyes wide open about the reality that absolutely that this nuclear waste might very well sit near the Columbia River for generations.
If not forever. I don't know. I mean, I know the tribes are really, I mean, it's a non-starter with them. It's not going to sit there forever. I'm curious if you know what the tribes are doing to maybe hasten the cleanup of Hanford and to make sure that it really happens. The Trump administration did the best they could to just sort of put it aside and just let it stay contaminated.
Yeah, tribal governments along the Columbia River, have been at the forefront of advocating for Hanford cleanup, and it is due to the leadership of tribal nations, including the Yakima Nation, the Confederated Tribes, the Umatilla Indian Reservation, and the Nez Perce, that Hanford cleanup has progressed as successfully as it has in certain areas. You know, there are success stories around Hanford cleanup. There are many huge issues that remain to tackle, but, you know, tribal governments are deeply engaged in Hanford cleanup. And it is, I think, when you look at the letter that the Confederated Tribes Umatilla Indian Reservation sent to the U.S. Department of Energy, it's really clear that adding more nuclear energy infrastructure along the Columbia River will be a huge distraction for tribes, for staff that need to be focused on the very complicated and challenging task of Hanford cleanup, which presents completely novel and unique cleanup challenges. And it really is with the leadership of tribal governments that we've seen Hanford cleanup progress to where it is today. And it's absolutely critical that, you know, for folks who, you know, are living throughout the Pacific Northwest, that we lean heavily on our elected officials and encourage them to honor the treaties that the United States government has with tribal nations, as they evaluate whether, you know, they are going to support more nuclear along the Columbia.
So what is the timeline for this small nuclear device that they want to build at Hanford?
Yeah, and I, again, the industry calls it small. We would never consider adding more nuclear energy at the scale they are as small. When we're looking, that, you know, like many developers, their timeline is very aggressive and seems highly unlikely. But they're looking at a roughly, you know, 7 to 8 year turnaround for this to be operating.
So I'm just wondering, you said before that they haven't applied for their permits yet to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. What have they done so far, and what kinds of go-aheads have they had, even if they haven't applied for the permits yet?
First, they secured, this is X Energy, the company behind the small modular nuclear reactor proposed at Hanford. They secured $80 million from the U.S. Department of Energy. And second, they signed a memorandum of agreement with the Grant County Public Utility District and the Energy Northwest, which operates the only nuclear power plant in the Northwest, the Columbia Generating Station. So they've done a lot of media touting the novelty, the safety of their reactor proposal. But to date, they haven't, I'm not aware that they've actually filed any formal applications that would kick off the public engagement process. You know, what's also really important to note is that their proposal at Hanford, it actually consists of four 80 megawatt reactors. So they're looking at a total output of, you know, between 300 and 320 megawatts. So it is, you know, they describe it as small as a way to, I believe, mislead the public, but the risks are not small, and the impacts are very large.
Well, actually, I think I was reading in the report that there's more waste being that would be produced by this style of reactor than the old traditional water-cooled reactors. Is that true?
That is true.
Why is that?
So the reactor that they that X Energy is proposing, it actually produces very large volumes of spent fuel, more than 10 times that of light water reactors per unit of electricity generated, which is due to its unique fuel technology.
So that seems to be another reason for concern. And I just keep wondering, how can people take the information that you have and the information that's in this report and use it to directly confront X Energy and the Grant County Public Utility District and the federal government who's funding this?
Absolutely. Well, first is, if you want to learn more, you go to columbiariverkeeper.org. On our website, you'll find our report, and you'll also find a petition to a number of elected officials to weigh in. And we've already seen a really stunning response from people across the Northwest taking action on our petition, which is really exciting. It takes less than a minute, and it really is powerful when people come together and express their opinion. It's also really important for folks to spread the word. You know, the proposed nuclear reactor at Hanford has mostly flown under the radar up to this point. So, you know, share the report with people, share the petition, encourage people to take action. Pick up the phone and call your elected officials. Call your, whether it's your member of Congress, you know, folks on your city council. It's important to that our elected officials, at whether it's the local, state level, hear from people. You know, if you're thinking about picking up the phone, the first call to make would be in Washington to Governor Inslee and in Oregon to Governor Brown.
Well, here in Oregon, I guess periodically there's a push from Republican state legislators on the behalf of this Portland-based small modular nuclear reactor developer to change the Oregon law that bans the building of any kind of nuclear reactor. And it so far hasn't come anywhere close to passing. But the fact that this is an effort on the part of this particular company to change Oregon law seems to be a foreshadowing of what is at play. In Washington, of course, it's a different situation because there is no such ban. So I kind of want to put those two little theses together, and how does that create a game plan?
Well, I think it really shows the need for, as we try to, you know, push for legislation, which has been very successful in Oregon and Washington, to, you know, move off of fossil fuels, that we're not being tricked into the next kind of worst option. And so it really calls for engagement across the board, that, you know, it is really clear to elected officials that while, you know, people in the Pacific Northwest want a rapid transition from fossil fuels, it's not going to be at any cost, and it's not going to be ignoring positions of tribal governments, of indigenous people, and the United States government's treaty obligations to those tribes.
So what is Jay Inslee's position on all of that?
To my knowledge, Jay Inslee has not taken a position opposing this small modular nuclear reactor at Hanford, and that has to change.
Because I know that the state of Washington has had a funny mixed history with Hanford. And back when I was first working on projects about Hanford, it seemed like the Department of Ecology in Washington was kind of in bed with the Department of Energy in the other Washington, in Washington, D.C., and just kind of letting Hanford get away with what it was doing. And then later on, maybe 10 years later, the Department of Ecology in Washington started taking a very strong stand, and I think there were a bunch of legal cases. Is there a possibility of getting the Washington Department of Ecology engaged again with understanding the way that they need to start really watchdogging and putting down whatever abilities they have at regulating what happens at Hanford, including building this new supposedly exciting green project that's not so green?
Yeah, and it will be advocating to many decision makers in Washington State, as well as to agencies in Oregon, to get involved. Along the Columbia River, a great example was, you know, the nation's largest oil by rail terminal was proposed in Vancouver, Washington, and it was absolutely critical in that process for Washington State regulators and Governor Inslee, who, you know, there had the final say on whether that proposal would move forward. You know, it was critical for individual people to weigh in, but also for municipalities, for agencies, at all levels of government and in different states. Because at the end of the day, what happens along the Columbia River in Washington State is not a Washington issue. And that is the case whether you're talking about Hanford cleanup, whether you're talking about Lower Snake River dams, oil by rail, coal export terminals, or this latest small modular nuclear reactor proposal.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Lauren Goldberg, who's with Columbia Riverkeeper, about plans to build a small modular nuclear reactor at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation and why that's such a bad idea. In the last part of the show, let's talk about what should be happening at Hanford. We've made some allusions to the cleanup, but let's talk specifically about what this cleanup is involving and why the small modular nuclear project is such a distraction from what really needs to happen.
Well, right now at Hanford, there are massive pollution challenges that the government needs to be tackling, and that, you know, many workers every day are out there actively working on Hanford cleanup. Some of the kind of top issues of concern that, again, this SMR proposal is distracting from is, you know, active leaks from underground tanks at Hanford. There's a tank known as B109 that has leaked 1,700 gallons of radioactive and toxic pollution to the soil at Hanford. And in an area where there's already been 200,000 gallons of radioactive and toxic pollution that's leaked to soil and groundwater. So there are very real and active pollution challenges at Hanford. It's absolutely critical with the Biden administration that we see new leadership and decision makers at the U.S. Department of Energy which oversees Hanford cleanup, along with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Washington State Department of Ecology. One of our top priorities is to see a completely absurd policy reversed. It was the Trump administration. It's really stunning. They decided that in order to cut costs around Hanford cleanup, which is, you know, a multi-billion dollar per year investment, in order to cut costs, they would simply change the label on the radioactive waste at Hanford from high-level radioactive waste to low-level. Low-level, which by simply changing the label on some waste, cuts costs because the cleanup is not as intensive. That policy from the Trump administration is still on the books. And so one of our top priorities is having the Biden administration, with all of its commitments to, you know, considering environmental justice, listening to tribal nations, putting science first, to look at the science and reverse that absurd policy from the Trump administration.
Well, what's it going to take for them to do that?
It's going to take people across the Northwest demanding that the Biden administration wake up and stop following the company line from the Trump administration. And I think at the end of the day, that takes changing leadership at the folks that are overseeing Hanford cleanup at the U.S. Department of Energy. We're still seeing many of the very same people that were advocating for and ultimately adopted that policy are still leading the so-called cleanup effort.
Well, there's so many things to worry about right now, and the Biden administration is seeming to be totally overwhelmed from everything from Afghanistan to COVID to climate crisis to Republican recalcitrance in doing anything. How do you see that we can get the Biden administration to move on this very vital issue?
I think it at the end of the day, it's showing strong support for Hanford cleanup from across the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, not just in the Tri-Cities, which is, you know, located, you know, geographically most closely, but really demonstrating that there is strong public support from all corners of the Northwest, including, you know, throughout the state of Oregon, that people value a clean Columbia River, that they care about the legacy of toxic and radioactive pollution, and that it's time for a real game change around Hanford cleanup, a real shakeup that, you know, is, you know, this far into the Biden administration we aren't seeing yet.
Well, one of the things that concerns me is that it still feels to me that most people in this country and around the world don't know what Hanford is. When you think about nuclear buzzwords, there's Fukushima, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and other environmental disasters that people around the world know. How do we make Hanford a household name?
Convincing people that Hanford's a place worth fighting for, that it is a, you know, if you go out to the Hanford Reach of the Columbia River, you can, if you can't make it out there, you can jump on Columbia River Keeper's website, and we've got a number of really incredible videos showing just what a remarkable place and what remarkable people rely on the Columbia River, and particularly the area around Hanford. I think it's by demonstrating that there is, there is such a love for the cultures, the strong salmon runs here in the Pacific Northwest, and that, you know, we can't ignore the very toxic legacy at Hanford, that needs to be part of the conversation when we're talking about salmon recovery, when we're talking about public health. And I think at the end of the day, it's, also having great independent journalists like you who are helping to share stories for people that are impacted by Hanford, by its legacy, and looking to the next generation and how they want to use the site. It was really incredible just before the pandemic, Columbia River Keeper partnered with Yakima Nation, and we had over 100 people out along the Columbia River near Hanford, and were able to take people on boat rides to view the area, the site. And I think it's really just a powerful thing to connect people with this remarkable place, and to inspire people to keep fighting for Hanford, because it really is going to take our collective and long-term commitment to this area.
Well, I was on that trip to Hanford, and I was very happy to be invited to go along. And one of the things that made me the happiest was I hadn't been out there in a few years, and I still was under the impression that the cleanup was just kind of a fiasco. But when I took that boat ride and I saw the actually mothballed reactors, which the last time I've been out there were just out there in the air, it gave me some hope. So let's talk a little bit about what has been cleaned up and how that can be a marker for where we need to go.
Yeah, there has been really incredible movement with groundwater cleanup at Hanford. There is an extensive pump and treat groundwater system throughout the Hanford site that plays a very important role in protecting the Columbia River from groundwater pollution. That's not to say that there aren't still, you know, very real issues. And as I noted earlier, you know, there's currently an active leak of, you know, radioactive and toxic tank at Hanford. There has been a lot of demolition of infrastructure at Hanford. There has been a long-running effort to, you know, develop a first-of-its-kind plant to turn radioactive waste into glass. So there is a tremendous effort underway, both by workers and scientists at Hanford, to ensure that cleanup happens and that it happens well. But there remain, you know, major issues in leadership, as well as the federal government's investment in Hanford cleanup. And so it really, at the end of the day, calls for our you know, collective commitment to, you know, ensuring that elected officials across the Northwest understand that Hanford cleanup is a priority.
Well, one of the things that I heard a lot this past Indigenous Peoples Day last Monday was the important role that Indigenous people need to play in environmental issues. And I wonder if there's a way that the tribes who live around and who rely on the area around the Hanford Reach for their livelihood, for their traditions, if there's a way that they could officially become the people in charge of the cleanup.
Yeah, it's a great thought, and one that I would, you know, encourage you to invite officials from those tribes to reflect on. Yakima Nation for many years has had, for example, an agency devoted to Hanford cleanup with, you know, a number of experts in cleanup and culture and use of the area, you know, as well as other tribal governments. And so they absolutely have that expertise. And there's, you know, no reason why the input of tribal governments shouldn't be on the same footing as that of the, you know, state and federal government.
Well, Lauren, it's great to have you on Locus Focus again, and we will be talking about this issue, I'm sure, a lot in the coming future. So thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been talking with Lauren Goldberg with Columbia Riverkeeper, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KWOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KPFG LPFM, KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of the show or any of our KWOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KWOO staff, who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KWOO in the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible from home during this pandemic. And you can help us by becoming a member of KWOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll get an update from Michael Krochta with BARC on the post-fire logging planned along the Clackamas River. We'll go out with some music by Jello Biafra and Mojo Nixon. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, wash your hands, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance when necessary and wear a mask.
Up to heaven to get the brimstone fire. Hi, I'm Dr. Demento, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website.